It was a man with very strong religious backgrounds, upset by the situation that occurred during the commune, trying to reconcile the teachings of his boyhood with the facts of life as he encountered them, looking around. Now I think this is outstanding. Most of us, when we have any doubts, just religious doubts, just brush them aside. Well, let's not upset the apple cart. But Balat went out and looked around and made a decision and then dedicated his life to it. I think you could see the French peasant in his attitudes. He worked hard. He had achieved something in defiance of most of the organized religious groups of the world, despite their excommunications, their interdicts, and their active hostility. He had been able to create what he had wanted to create, an old Catholic church here in the United States. And then having done that, having shown that he was capable of it, he returned to the church of his boyhood. But regardless of the fact that deeply religious as he was, and as happy as he was with his return to the security of his childhood, still there was something he had achieved. This bishopric that had been denied to him by all the religious bodies of the world, practically, and in the face of all this opposition, he had achieved it. And this, he was not going to sacrifice, even if it involved his eternal salvation. He was not going to sacrifice it. And this stubborn French tenacity, this was the French peasant speaking. This was a work of his head in his hands, and he was not going to give it up. And even as an old man, he refused to accept security in the face of this depriving him of the one thing that he had really achieved, the lifetime of work. And practically everybody that came in contact with Balat personally had nothing but kind words to say about the man himself, his character. I think one of the finest things is probably, I don't know where this came from, I got it from Father McDaniels. He got it from some Episcopalian magazine. It's called, it's a series, now I don't know what magazine this ran in. It's titled An Old Man's Love Story by the Reverend A. Parker Curtis. And he describes a village, a visit to the Duval Church, the second of the Catholic churches established during this missionary work. Pierre Balat received us with that welcome which is hospitality. And remember, he's writing after all these things happened and Balat was kicked out of the church and everything else. Received us with a welcome which is hospitality, always made a very real thing. In the afternoon and evening, an informal sort of reception was held to give the people an opportunity to meet the bishop. And I shall never forget the embarrassment of Pierre Balat when, as he stood by the bishop's side, Maria A., a blind woman, then and still after 30 years a principal singer in the choir, threw her arms about his neck and kissed him on the cheek. It was a spontaneous expression of deep affection that she felt for her parish priest, and one saw like affection manifested in many ways. Late that night, I went into the kitchen with Father Balat and another person to visit with him as he ate his supper. He was to dedicate the Mass the next morning, and he had gone through a strenuous day. But I was not prepared for the sight of one person devouring a whole roasted chicken, two loaves of bread, and two bottles of wine. And all the time that his strong white teeth tore at the food, he was telling delightfully droll stories and keeping up a constant stream of entertaining nonsense. He was then about 35 or 38 years old, tall, strongly built, handsome, clean-looking, full of enthusiasm, gay spirits, and restless energy. There was no hard work or sacrifice from which he shrank in carrying out his work. He was idolized by his people, and all up and down the Door County Peninsula, congregations were clamoring for him to open up old Catholic missions. Friends and money he could have had for the asking. The field was ripe. Opportunity knocked at his door. But the history of his willfulness and folly is well known. His ambition and desire to become a bishop led him into devious wanderings. Until now, I suppose he's not seriously regarded at all in the religious world. Had he been more patient and humble, there is nothing he desired which would not have come to a man of such varied gifts. His name might today be held in such honor in all the Belgian country as few men could expect to obtain. Mm. Now, this was written by an Episcopalian minister about 30 years after the event.
What was the attitude of his parishioners once he was kicked out of the Catholic Church and the Episcopal Church?
He was adored.
He was adored.
Many times I've heard people, even though they were old, they were not young enough at the time to have remembered, but they could remember the way their parents talked about them. And if you talk to Father McDaniels, he can tell you about his own reaction to what he has learned in that parish. In fact, having that church has evidently changed his whole attitude.
It's now an Episcopal church, though, you said.
It is an Episcopal church.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Father McDaniels is the Episcopal pastor over at Algoma, and he handles the two churches. Hmm. All you have are the bare details of the story, and this is a story that you can't read particularly anywhere. In the newspaper accounts in Detroit, in Chicago, in Cleveland, in Buffalo, in New York, you'll pick out bits, and in the World Press, various foreign papers, you'll pick up bits about Father Vallat. All of them very critical. Mm. But he was one of these unique characters that might have made a tremendous impact almost any place, in any area that he wanted to undertake, because he did not have an educational background. And of course this demeaned him in the eyes of many of the ecclesiastical authorities. His arguments, as he writes to Grafton and defends himself, are rationally very well organized. He's an intelligent man, and he doesn't split the theological hairs that you so often get in the theological arguments. But he appears to be very sincere. A part of the fascination of the old Catholic movement in the Belgian area was that they could conduct a Mass in French. Mm-hmm. And at Little Sturgeon he was conducting Masses in French, German, and English.
Ooh.
And this was long before the 19th century yet, long before the present tendency. Mm-hmm.
People had someone to relate to it then, mm-hmm. with him.
The children, the old people adored him. And he was a sort of a big man that the ordinary Belgian man could relate to. The pictures that I've seen of him, he was a little bit heavy-set man, apparently, although it's hard to tell with robes on and that sort of thing. But he was undoubtedly a very characteristic French peasant, you know, husky right. type. Dark hair, massive, dark, thick hair, dark eyebrows, a firm jaw, smiling eyes, a very pleasant, personable character. And all the remarks are that women were terrifically attracted to him, but there never is an inkling that there was anything other than just simply admiration, that sort of thing. And never in all of the accusations that have been leveled against him have I found one that really pretentiously tried to indicate that he was a scoundrel or a crook. They may have used a term, but it was just a sort of a rhetorical expression. Yeah. He left a big mark.
I'm going over pearls.
All right, honey. He left a big mark in the area. Although it isn't recognized as a part of his mark, the memories that he's left behind, the impact on the various religious organizations, because their struggle with him did change for the better, both the Episcopalians and the Catholics in the area. St. Norbert's College is here because of Vallat. And we have a park in the city where I wrote a story about it, that the only park that was ever created by way of a Vatican Council and an apostate Catholic preacher, clergyman. But it was a park that was created because the land couldn't be used for any other purpose. And here were these businessmen sitting holding the land. And finally there came a time when much of the council, and many of the city officials, were members of these 20 or 30 businessmen who had been subscribers. So then they decided that the city ought to have a park, and that this would be a nice park. That was about the only thing you could use it for. And because it constituted a majority of the council, the city got a park, although it didn't want a park, didn't know what to do with a park, and never used a park. Finally used it for a stone quarry one time. Now, of course, it is a park. Parks are acceptable things nowadays. They weren't in those days. But if it hadn't been for Vallat, we wouldn't have had the park there, because the area wouldn't have been set apart. It's been logged over and forgotten, and gradually somebody would have used it for something or other. The amazing thing, I think, is that Vallat was able in that Catholic community, Belgian Catholic community, to do the things that he did.
Yeah.
And it was only after the Catholic Church really reformed itself and brought over somebody with character like Pennings, who could do much, who was much the same kind of a man that Vallat was in many ways, that Vallat's influence really began to wane. Because then, after all, when the Catholics could get the benefits of their church without all the hassle by that, was fine. But he certainly did leave a mark on the area.
Is it possible to categorize the attitudes of the people whose ancestors followed him, people who are living now? What do they think of him now when they look back on him and know that their relatives were part of his congregation?
For the young people, it makes no difference. It's nothing to them. Vallat is a name that, actually, most people, I could go down and talk in the Belgian community and mention the name Vallat. Now, I don't know exactly whether this is a result of their ignorance or refusal to acknowledge that they knew about him. But I remember one time I spoke down in Brussels and said, "How many of you know Vallat?" I could only get a few very enthusiastic reactions, but most of them, nothing at all. And of course, this is true because a new generation is growing up that didn't know him. And Vallat is carefully exercise from the anything except the polemic writings of both the Episcopalians and the Catholic Church. The Belgians have tried their best to forget their religious differences. Well, that little pamphlet that I was just showing you with a picture of the Reuben place. You read this, or you read the official history, and you don't find, I don't think this fellow even mentions Vallat. And, for example, the church at St. Hubert's, that's at Mazare, which was a split off from the church down at Rosaire. The story that he uses, the story that is used by Holland, I believe, and by the regular church authorities, in fact, people that have lived their entire lifetime as members of the Mazare Church, St. Hubert's, know nothing at all about its history. They say that St. Hubert's was established because the congregation, after the church burnt down in the fire of 1871, that was located in Door County, the people from the north, from the southern end wanted the new church built at Rosaire, and the people from the northern end wanted it built at Mizere, and as a result you had two churches. Mm-hmm. Well, now actually the church was rebuilt at Rosaire and had been for years until Father Lisha came along, and it was then that the split occurred.
Because of his personality?
His personality. Mm-hmm.
I get it. Okay.
And he was the one, he had to flee to Door County with the sheriff in hot pursuit with part of the furniture from the parsonage. And so in order to, as I say, the people who actually experienced these things have died. The oral tradition that they have passed on has whitewashed the whole situation, ignored it, so that the younger generation, even the people that are concerned about their traditions, actually know nothing at all about. And they, when you tell them that they're mistaken and that this wasn't what happened, well, they look at the church history. And you just ask them to go back through the files of the Kewanee and the Door County newspapers, to go back through the court records, and it's all written out there very plainly. But of course nobody uses the files of the old newspapers or looks back through the old court records, and consequently this information is not available.
Do you think that those who were alive when Vallat was finally kicked out of the area, did they gladly turn over to Episcopalian beliefs rather than old Catholic beliefs? Because I assume that's what the Episcopalian Church then did take over, didn't it?
Yes. Well, you see, the tradition was, the transition was easy there, because Father Gauthier, who was the right hand of Vallat, then became the pastor of the church there, and then moved on to Green Bay later on to take care of the rebels down there. So that it was easy to make the transition.
Well, it was more of a smooth transition as far as... Are the beliefs of the old Catholic and the Episcopalian that different? They seem rather similar to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know very much about theology or religious dogma, but reading the arguments as presented by Vallat and Grafton and the others, I can't see that they were doing anything more than splitting hairs. That the real basic difference was a matter of personalities. The unwillingness of one to reduce his authority for the sake of stability or peace. You just had, unfortunately at that time, if you'd had a lesser man on the part of the Episcopalians, he could have done business with Vallat. Let Vallat have his way and say, well, certainly The Episcopalian Church is trying to coordinate itself with the Roman Catholic Church in an ecumenical movement. The Old Catholic Church is even closer to the Episcopalian Church in many ways. Church is much more different in theology than these two have come together and associated themselves for the sake of economics. And this is what well could have happened. But what did happen was that the bulk of Velat's congregation turned back to the original Catholic Church. And only a few devotees remained, largely because of the influence of Father Gauthier and the people that followed, all of whom were very fine men.
Are there any still alive today that still practice old Catholicism? In this area, I mean.
No, I don't believe so. There are perhaps 50 or 100,000 old Catholics in the United States, but they've continually broken up into splinter groups until it's pretty hard to identify them. The New York Church, the organization out there, is split up about 3 times, I believe. The impulse is always to... it's almost traditional. When people like Velat establish something, it's on a personality basis, you see. Mm-hmm. Another personality comes along, and that's the answer. It's unfortunate, I think, that Holand referred to him as a religious freebooter. This wasn't what he was. He certainly was a strong personality, but he was never a person who placed religious convictions ahead of his personal ambitions. I think this is attested to by the way that in which he treated with Grafton. His letters to Grafton are most humble. He was a poor man without money. You could see that there must have been a desire there to try to associate himself with the wealth and the prestige of the Episcopal Church. And yet he refused to withdraw on this one point of his becoming a bishop. And it was so strange, the Bishop of Utrecht, who had become a very warm personal friend of his, they had exchanged letters of, very friendly letters, and old Catholics, the old Catholic organization of Utrecht, not only expressed their relationships, their warm relationship with him, but at one time, they sent him a large collection of theological works as a donation for the establishment of his library. I think 100 or so volumes, quite valuable volumes. But despite all of this, when the pressure was turned on, the financial pressure of the Episcopal Church and the moral pressure, both the old Catholics in Holland and the old Catholics in Switzerland withdrew their support from the lot. And left him alone.
Do you feel that his fight to become a bishop was more a matter of his own personal pride, or was it a functional thing so that he could serve his community churches?
Well, it's hard to see in a man like Velat, because his personality is such a powerful one. But this was a time when Velat could combine both his dedication and his personality very easily. Because the two were inseparable. He had to be a bishop if the old Catholic Church in the United States was to succeed. And he was the only person in the United States, only representative of the church, that was making any appreciable prospect. He had a beautiful future before him. And this business of becoming a bishop was essential. So he could easily equate his own personal ambitions with his religious objectives. And it was very easy for his opponents to separate the two.
Sure, they could ignore his serving the church and concentrate only on his own personality, which is what they did quite often, I think.
I wish I could have met him. This would have been, this is one of the things I regret. When you go back in history and may have a stream and make a good catch, you always have, all you have is an image that you pull out of the water. You don't have the person themselves. And, the only way you can do anything with that image is to try to collect these little details about the relationships with people and that sort of thing. Not historical in the factual history, but the sort of thing that make them real again and make them persons. And Vallat was a very, very real person. The one thing that I can't visualize, and yet this happens so many times, is his total dedication to one particular goal. And yet this is a characteristic of a man who achieves things. You have to be totally dedicated. You can't wish to enjoy life on the side. You can't wish to have a full life. You must have a very narrow life. And this is what Vallat had. No family, no close friends, but just simply people that he was trying to serve, and that, and a church that he was trying to build. And he did create, he did create a problem wherever he went, and I think these people that that won't conform, that are upsetting things, are always the most interesting. They're the people, they're the salt that gives a savor to life. The stuffed shirts and the conformists, these are not the people one looks to when you want color, you want romance, you want a feeling that life is really worthwhile. When you see people like Vallat getting so much out of so little, there is a wealth of material around. It's just a question of taking the time
to gather it.
But the State Historical Society does have some of the they have the clippings, for example, of from the papers abroad, Ceylon, of Vallat's consecration as bishop. It's a most interesting one. The United States Council attended it, and there's a description of presence and the. Displays being offered and all that sort of thing.
I didn't realize, I thought it was more of a secretive thing with him. I didn't realize.
Oh, it was very public. You see, the bishop over there had to send out letters to various people here in Wisconsin and around the United States asking for certain questions about Vallat, his character and that sort of thing. And there were stories in the paper about these letters and the answers that some of them were sending in with regard to them. And this is what delayed the consecration for so long. And then coming back, just think, going halfway around the world in order to be consecrated, and then coming back and putting on his performance down in Green Bay with his robes, Archbishop. And the joke of it was, or I shouldn't say the joke, but for me it is humorous, the fact that he was consecrated in the apostolic succession, so that not even the Pope of Rome could say that he was not truly a bishop.
Even though he was excommunicated, right?
Even though he was excommunicated, he'd been made a bishop. And the excommunication merely deprives you of the services of the church without depriving you of the offices that you held in the church. That's, at least that's my understanding of it.
Yeah. Well, do you have anything more to add about Vallat? Or I'm sure we could
just
add
a lot of detail. There's a tremendous amount of detail. I was looking at the notes. His the time he had over in England, he consecrated some rather interesting characters who created some interesting situations over there. And then his appearances in the European scene at various times when the For example, when the French government expropriated church property and Vallat was on hand, willing to organize a church and take over the property for them, the comments made by the Vatican on his appearances, the rumors that followed him around the United States, even here in the local press, whenever Vallat appeared any place, it was immediately an opportunity for editorial denouncement, because he was a fellow who had who turned down the community. You know, this was couldn't be held against him. And I think the most fascinating thing. Let's go ahead.
Maybe I should turn this over.